Today, our task is to dissect how organizations can fundamentally shift AI adoption from being a series of chaotic, unpredictable product rollouts to becoming a standard, systemic, and frankly, an utterly reliable operational accelerator.
We're talking about making AI adoption predictable, scalable, maybe even, dare I say it, a little bit boring.
Boring is good.
We've branded this mission boring on purpose.
Yeah.
And we need to extract that foundational blueprint for success, that that base recipe for standardizing AI that allows you to control the inherent operational risk.
Yes.
Maximize the actual measurable value, and then finally achieve sustainable non-theatrical speed.
And that stability requires a complete mental model shift right at the start. AI is not some standalone product you install and then, consider your job done.
Yeah.
If you treat it like a bolt-on feature, you're absolutely guaranteeing turbulence.
Okay, let's unpack that immediately, because the sources use a really powerful analogy to set the stage.
Mm.
The kitchen as a small, contained operational system.
Right. So if your kitchen workflow, your process for prep, cooking, cleanup, if it's highly efficient, clear, standardized, everything's in its place.
Yeah.
Then you introduce a new high-speed appliance, say a commercial-grade blender or a rapid induction oven.
Mm-hmm.
It dramatically speeds up your output. It compresses cycle time perfectly.
Yeah. But, and this is the key insight for our listeners, if your kitchen is a total mess.
A disaster zone.
Yeah. If there are 10 different places you store the measuring cups, if prep work is inconsistent, if you haven't managed waste, that high-speed blender doesn't fix the chaos.
No, it just flings the garbage around faster.
Exactly. It amplifies the existing mess.
Precisely. AI is an accelerator. It finds and amplifies whatever organizational conditions, good or bad, already exist in your environment.
Mm.
So when we move away from the marketing hype and look at AI through a purely practical, Lean Six Sigma lens.
Which is just about systematically removing waste.
Right.
Right.
The structured methodology for it. We get three blunt but exceptionally helpful framings for how AI behaves in an organization.
Okay, lay them out for us. This is the operational truth we need to internalize from the get-go.
So first,
yeah.
AI is a process accelerator, not a product.
Yeah.
Its main effect is compressing the cycle time that already exists in a workflow. Second, if that flow isn't managed, AI functions as a variation amplifier. It will find every non-standard pathway and accelerate it.
Oh, that's dangerous.
And third, if you haven't engineered for quality up front, it becomes a defect multiplier if poorly governed.
That framing is deeply sobering. It means AI doesn't just politely stay in its lane and fix the things you pointed at.
Not at all.
So if you have a clear, mature workflow, great. You compress time, you get a win. But that variability problem, if an organization has, say, 10 different ways to submit a customer support claim,
and none of them are standard,
the AI doesn't pick the best one. It multiplies the confusion and the friction of all 10 of those, but at machine speed.
And this is where the defect multiplier aspect hits hardest. If your data quality is inconsistent, if, say, 5% of your customer records have errors or missing fields, the AI will rely on that shaky data and generate outputs that scale those defects. It doesn't magically fix your data governance.
It just scales the bad outputs from that bad data.
Exactly. So the question we constantly hear from leadership, how fast can we roll out co-pilots to everyone, is almost always the wrong question.
It's focused on activity and not systemic health. So what are the right questions?
We need to be asking, where, specifically, does AI introduce new variability into our processes? Second, where does it actually remove waste, the non-value add steps?
Rework, delay.
All of it.
Okay.
Third, where does it inadvertently create new rework or catastrophic risk we didn't have before? And maybe the most important question of all.
Go on.
Do we have documented standardized work for the AI capability we're deploying? Or are we just hoping it cleans up the mess for us?
That's the key. If we can't answer those questions with precision, we're building on a foundation of sand. These questions aren't barriers to speed.
No, they're the on-ramps.
They're the highly profitable on-ramps to making AI useful, scalable, and predictable.
Mm-hmm. Let's move straight into section one then, which deals with establishing the right mindset, especially for the product owner or, the business lead. The priority sequence here is everything. Value, quality, then speed, VQS. The sequencing is absolutely non-negotiable for success. The sources are clear on this. The vast majority of organizational disappointment, it stems from flipping this order.
Chasing speed first,
usually because of competitive pressure or some executive mandate that, frankly, lacks an engineering perspective.
And what's the inevitable painful result when you do that?
Right.
When you chase speed before you've stabilized for value and quality.
Well, you don't get speed. Mm-hmm. Not in the long run. You get churn, you get duplicated effort, and eventually you get this pervasive AI fatigue.
What does that look like on the ground, operationally?
It looks like 10 different teams, all independently building 10 slightly different solutions to do the same thing, like summarizing legal documents.
Because there was no base recipe provided.
None. So they each waste cycles, setting up identical plumbing.
Mm.
Then costs spike unpredictably the second you get any real usage, because FinOps wasn't engineered into the platform from day one.
And the sources call that motion in the wrong direction. It creates the illusion of progress for a quarter. You get a great demo. But it fundamentally destabilizes the long-term system and just erodes trust in the technology.
It does. The goal has to be to standardize work and make costs predictable first, before you scale.
So let's break down VQS. It starts with the anchor, value.
It's the absolute non-negotiable starting point. You have to prove, with data, that the AI is improving a real, tangible workflow outcome that the business actually cares about and can measure.
So you define that value up front. It's not a guess.
It can't be. And if the capability doesn't deliver that value against the KPI you set, you have to have the discipline to stop doing it.
Okay, so once value is anchored, we know this thing should exist, then, and only then, do we move to quality.
Right. This is the necessary firewall against that defect multiplier effect we talked about.
And how do we define quality in this context?
Quality here is making the output safe, reliable, controlled, fully auditable, and compliant. It's the protective layer that prevents the AI from becoming an unacceptable risk.
So even if it delivers value, if it's causing rework 15% of the time, the quality metric is failing. You can't scale that.
You can't. And only once value and quality are stable, once you have a predictable, safe output that delivers a proven result, that is the moment you step on the gas and chase speed.
That's when you build the fast lanes.
Exactly. Speed in this context isn't some heroic engineering sprint. It's a systematic dividend. The sources say it shows up like a blessing you didn't have to fake.
I love that phrasing. And this brings us to the trap of transformation theater.
Yes.
Give us some examples of what this looks like in practice, because this is where credibility just dies.
The fastest way to lose credibility is to treat AI adoption like a temporary program designed just for a presentation.
So it's got a splashy exec demo.
A big kickoff event, maybe a celebrity speaker, and a hard, arbitrary deadline tied to the end of the quarter.
The problem being it focuses on the activity of launching, not the outcome of changing how work gets done.
Precisely. You see teams rush a co-pilot to production that has a beautiful interface but only works on, say, 5% of documents because they completely ignored the foundational data cleaning and governance.
They prioritized the shiny object.
They celebrated the launch, a one-time event, instead of celebrating sustained operational improvement, which has to be continuous. The only way out of the theater is to treat AI as standard work.
So what does that transition from program to standard work mean for an engineering team?
It means defining repeatable, documented patterns that follow strict specifications. Crucially, these patterns have to be proven to reduce cycle time and errors in core workflows.
Not just shiny new peripheral ones.
Exactly. And they must have built-in controls from day one. This changes everything: how it's funded, who owns the budget, the metrics for success.
Which means we stop celebrating, we built a new co-pilot.
And we start celebrating the hard operational improvements, the measurements that matter become. Did the cycle time for a claim drop by 20%? Did the error rate fall? Did rework decline? Did the unit cost metric improve?
And is adoption real? Are people actually using it to replace old friction points or just playing with it?
Exactly.
So value is the anchor. Without it, quality efforts feel like bureaucracy.
Right.
And speed efforts just feel like chaos.
So with that VQS sequence locked in, the next logical step has to be standardization. This brings us to section two. Standardization as the foundation, building the base recipes and layering control.
We hear the term AI sprawl all the time. And the assumption is usually that it's reckless engineers going rogue.
Yeah.
But the sources suggest the cause is a lot more mundane.
It's often a failure of organizational infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Sprawl happens because the central organization fails to provide a shared base recipe or a standard platform SAC.
Right.
Think about all the boring, undifferentiated work every single team has to do just to get an AI capability off the ground.
Okay, let's list it. It sounds exhausting.
It is. Every team has to pick their own models, fire up auth, set up logging, bits eight where the guardrails go, improvise cost controls.
So every team wastes time doing the exact same work, just with slightly different frameworks and, I imagine, slightly different security gaps.
That's it. The sources call it duplicate plumbing, and it's a massive hidden enterprise cost. It is not innovation. It's just rebuilding the same foundation over and over again.
Which is why the core standardization principle becomes so important. What is that principle, stated concisely?
The strategy is this: reduce variation where it creates enterprise cost and risk, and increase flexibility where it creates local outcomes.
So when the base platform is steady and reliable, teams don't move slower.
They move cleaner.
Yeah.
And with confidence. And clean speed is the only kind of speed that's scalable and governable.
Okay, let's break down the control layers. This is where it gets tactical. There are four, starting with the most critical: tight, non-negotiable controls. Where does the organization draw that absolute line in the sand?
This layer controls the points of maximum enterprise risk, data breaches, regulatory issues, surprise bills. If you fail here, the whole thing fails, publicly and painfully. So, tight controls govern three areas. First, the AI models and providers allowed. This is a whitelist. It controls your cost, your compliance, your reliability.
So if a shiny new model comes out, but it's not on the whitelist, the platform gateway just blocks it.
It has to. Second is data access. Granular control over what the AI can see, which systems it pulls from, and what permissions it has. This is your primary defense against data leakage.
Least privilege.
Minimum necessary data. Always. And the third, tight control, is arguably the most important for stability. Can the AI take actions?
We're talking about creating tickets, sending emails, changing records.
This is the zero tolerance zone. Allowing an AI to take unauthorized write actions introduces catastrophic risk. A confused prompt could lead to a massive service outage or a financial error you can't trace.
So write actions have to be tightly controlled, human-in-the-loop approval, or only permitted under the absolute highest level of governance.
That sounds restrictive, but it's actually enabling. By making write access difficult, you force teams to focus their innovation on the read-only assist tasks first, which are safer and provide 80% of the value anyway.
So you get 80% of the value with 20% of the risk. I like that.
You don't innovate on plumbing. You innovate on user experience.
Okay, moving on. We relax a bit for standard paved road controls. This is the base recipe that eliminates the duplicate plumbing.
Right. This is your standardized AI stack. Your central AI gateway, approved APIs and connectors, your single logging and monitoring stack, and the minimum required testing that has to run before deployment.
This makes things supportable and scalable.
Exactly. Then we loosen the reins for loose team-owned controls. This is where you want local innovation.
This is where teams can experiment safely.
Yes. The prompts, the team-specific instructions, the exact workflow steps, the local playbooks they develop. The platform provides the pipes, but the teams optimize the water flowing through them.
And finally, the fourth layer, business-owned outcomes. This is about accountability.
The business owner has to own the use case priority. They own the success metrics, the KPI, the adoption goals. We have to keep reinforcing that value is a business result, a dollar figure, a time reduction. It is not an IT artifact.
The IT team runs the foundation, the business owns the outcome, and the unit cost metric.
Exactly. And to solidify that foundation, we have to standardize the build shapes. We can't have every team inventing a new species of solution architecture.
Okay, the sources list four solid starting shapes. First one, foundational and often the fastest to value: knowledge management, read only.
This is the lowest risk, highest ROI entry point. The standard architecture needs enterprise rights, robust search, usually RG-based mandatory citations, and full audit logging. It's great for internal knowledge workflows.
Second, the workflow copilot, human in the loop.
Assisted intelligence. The standard here is around guided steps and clear approval gates. The AI assists, but the human remains the final decision maker. Key for processes that touch systems but demand human accountability.
Third, the document generator, summarizer, or classifier.
Two critical standards here. One, use deterministic templates for consistency. Two, implement confidence routing. The system has to know when it's unsure and have a fallback, like routing a low-confidence document to a human.
So it doesn't just push garbage through the system.
Right. And the fourth, which the sources are very cautious about, Agentic AI tools. These are powerful autonomous tools. They have to start in a highly controlled yellow or red risk tier until the platform governance matures. If you treat these like a green tier project, you're just inviting chaos.
So when a team can recognize their need as one of these four shapes, they get the paved road.
They get templates, test harnesses, guardrails, and predictable cost levers. It eliminates the blank page paralysis.
Okay, we've set the priority with VQS and the foundation with standardization.
Yeah.
Now, section three, quality. You said AI is a defect multiplier, which means quality can't be an afterthought. It has to be designed in.
Absolutely. It has to be quiet, consistent, automatic, and from day one. The goal is to optimize for organizational flow without increasing the defect rate.
Because if the quality checks are slow and cumbersome, teams will just find a way around them.
They always do. So the checks have to be simple, standardized, and enforced by the platform itself.
Which brings us to the core tool for that, risk tiering. And the goal isn't to debate the tier in a meeting.
No, the goal is for a team to classify their use case in under 5 minutes so they instantly know the required controls. It's policy as code for risk management.
Okay, so the tiers are green, yellow, and red. Let's start with green, fast lane. This is the safest zone.
To qualify as green, four things all have to be true. First, it's internal only, no customer-facing output. Second, strictly read-only, no write actions.
Third, no sensitive data, no PII, PCI, PHI, nothing regulated.
And fourth, and this is critical, it must have a low consequence if wrong. We're talking about annoying errors, not harmful ones.
So an imperfect summary is okay, but something that damages reputation or causes financial loss is not.
Right. This is the zone for safe, friction-free deployment. Think internal knowledge search or summarizing non-sensitive meeting notes.
Got it. Now, yellow, controlled lane. This is an immediate step up in governance.
A project enters the yellow tier if any one of the following is true. It handles sensitive data, supports business-critical decisions like outage triage, uses tools that touch critical systems.
Even if a human approves it.
Even then. Or if it carries meaningful reputation or operational risk if it's inconsistent.
And yellow is the signal for mandatory elevation of controls. Deeper review, tighter evaluations, stronger monitoring.
And an explicit, high-level business owner sign-off. The business is now accepting a specific, quantifiable risk.
And finally, red, highest scrutiny, the zone of maximum danger and maximum governance.
If any one of these is met, the project is red. Any customer-facing output that gives advice, any regulated decision like credit scoring, any autonomous write actions.
Changing customer records or sending external financial communications.
Or any high-impact harm potential, safety, compliance, major financial loss.
This requires full, formal governance, the most rigorous evaluation, and mandatory stop-the-line controls baked into the platform before launch.
And there's a simple escalation rule. Any single red factor makes it red. And two yellow factors should automatically elevate a project to red until you have documented mitigations.
This is how you protect flow. You don't slow down the green stuff, but you make sure a catastrophic red project cannot get out the door without proof of controls.
Exactly. Which leads to the technical enforcement. The automatic stop the line triggers. These can't rely on a human intervening after the fact.
They have to be mandatory automatic events enforced by the platform. What are some examples?
For data policies, the AI gateway has to do real-time scanning. If PII is detected in a prompter response, the system has to stop, scrub the data, flag it, and alert security.
How does it enforce those tight controls, like the model allow us?
That's platform architecture. The gateway is the enforcer. If a request comes for an endpoint that's not on the allow list, it's an automatic block, a 403 error. Same for any tool that tries to write or change records without approval.
What about operational health?
If a service level objective in SLO is breached, say response time jumps above 5 seconds, it triggers an operational alert and a critical FinOps trigger. Spend anomalies. If the daily token burned exceeds a threshold, processing has to halt until the cost owner signs off.
Good systems rely on clear signals and non-political responses.
Absolutely. And you have to build in the foundational security, privacy, and model risk work from the start.
This is the stuff that sounds boring until you realize ignoring it creates millions in technical debt.
It has to be built into the platform. Mandatory single sign-on down the whole stack, least privilege access everywhere, end-to-end encryption, immutable audit logging.
And for data handling and model risk.
Mandatory redaction and DLP scans of data before it hits the REG index or the prompt. Ironclad contractual controls with LLM providers so they can't train on your data.
And what about the model risks? Hallucination, toxicity, jailbreaking?
You have to standardize an evaluation harness that runs before production and continuously after. It automatically checks the hallucination rate, toxicity scores, PII leakage, and resistance to jailbreak attempts.
If you don't build these automated systems early, the price you pay later is trust and reputation.
So if quality protects trust, then Section 4 cost predictability, or FinOps for AI, protects the balance sheet. AI spend has to stop being a surprise line item. It has to become a predictable, engineered expense.
Which means treating cost as a core engineered system, not just a bookkeeping exercise. And that requires a clear cost identity for every single AI application. What are the elements of that identity?
Every single capability needs four things. First, a clear cost owner, one accountable business leader. Second, a transparent budget. Third, and this is the most important, the unit cost metric.
And fourth,
granular metering tagged by product, use case, and environment.
Okay, let's spend a minute on that unit cost metric, because this is what links cost directly back to that value anchor. It's not enough to know you spent $10,000. You need to know what you got for it.
Correct. The unit cost metric transforms raw spend into an efficiency measure. Instead of tracking total token spend, you track cost per case resolved, or cost per document summarized.
So if you automate 1,000 documents for $1,000, your unit cost is $1 per document. If that jumps to $5...
You know you have an optimization problem, even if the total spend is the same.
Let's take a scenario, though. What if the cost per ticket goes up, but the cycle time drops from 2 days to 2 hours, boosting customer satisfaction?
That's the whole point of linking cost to value. If the cost rises, but the financial benefit of that speed and quality improvement vastly outweighs the cost, then the higher unit cost is justified. You're optimizing the whole system, not just the token layer.
It's about optimizing the value to cost ratio.
Exactly. FinOps for AI isn't about setting arbitrary ceilings, and we have to measure what actually drives the spend.
It's more than just tokens.
So much more. It's token usage, yes, but also retrieval cost, which is huge for our systems. Tool calls, operational overhead, the costs of defect remediation, and the underlying infrastructure costs.
Let's quickly define REG, retrieval augmented generation. The cost driver there is the search, right?
Right. It's the cost of the index search, the vector database queries. If your retrieval is poorly optimized, you might spend 5 times as much just finding the right data as you do on the final model output.
Which is why it has to be metered separately. So we need guardrails enforced by the platform, the 3-layer model for cost controls.
Right. This model sets boundaries that protect the ability to learn instead of just being a flat no.
Right.
We start at layer A, portfolio controls, what you fund.
This is about capping the long tail of unmanaged, costly experiments.
Exactly. You limit the approved model providers and tool stacks. You establish mandatory value gates for every use case. This gate requires an owner, a KPI, a unit cost target, and critically, a sunset condition.
A sunset condition.
A mandatory, non-negotiable trigger for automatic shutdown if the targeted value isn't realized after, say, 180 days. It proves the financial controls are real.
It forces accountability back to the business owner.
It does. Then layer B platform controls, what you run it on. This is the engineering optimization layer.
The foundation here is having one AI gateway for the entire enterprise.
Yes. It handles routing, security, logging, and optimization like caching. You enforce model tiering. Default to the cheapest model that meets the quality floor. Only escalate when the harness proves you have to.
What other optimizations save real money?
Caching common prompts, retrieval optimization for the vector database, and standardized document splitting. And, of course, environment quotas enforce budgets with throttling and aggressive caps for dev and test.
And layer C is for the delivery teams, delivery controls, how teams build, how to encourage safe, cost-conscious innovation.
Through the innovation sandbox, this is a safe, controlled space for learning. It has to have a fixed monthly token budget, pre-approved non-sensitive data sets, no path to production, and mandatory environment disposal after 90 days.
So they can learn without creating technical debt or unmanaged costs.
And this layer is also where you get the ultimate payoff, the fast lane to production. If a project stays in the green tier and passes all the automated policy as code checks, it ships. No meetings.
Replacing political friction with automated stability, I'd say. Okay, let's talk about the end result of all this, true speed. Section 5 is about how we claim that dividend we've earned through all this standardization.
The core message really bears repeating. Speed without standards is just motion. Real speed is a dividend you earn only after you've reduced variation and stabilized the foundation.
Because teams can move without constantly relitigating architecture or waiting for security sign-offs. Okay, here's where it gets really practical for the engineers listening. Let's detail the precise criteria for this fast lane. What has to be true for a team to ship a green tier product without any additional review?
It's an automated checklist enforced by the CI/CD pipeline and the AI gateway. First, the team has to use the approved stack, the standard gateway, vector store, identity logging, no exceptions.
Second, data compliance.
Data sources have to come from a pre-cleared, scrubbed, green list of trusted repositories. Third, risk profile adherence. No PII, no customer comms, no autonomous action. Strictly read-only assist, verified by the gateway.
And they have to use the defined base recipes?
Yes, they're reference template repositories. And all their code has to pass the mandatory policy as code CI checks. If all those criteria are met, the deployment is automatic. The governance team sees proof of compliance, not a meeting request.
That shift from manual approval to automated compliance is transformative. It creates flow.
It's synthesized into one simple phrase for the organization. If you do X, you never need a meeting.
And that changes the organizational friction completely.
It does. You complement the standards with clear guidance. You provide the template repositories, the CI policy checks, give immediate feedback, you publish a pattern cookbook, and you reserve office hours for genuine exceptions, not for routine work.
You've made the secure, compliant, cost-controlled path the path of least resistance.
That is the key to sustainable velocity. And this requires a final, often overlooked step, the language shift. Words reveal what you truly optimize for.
So you have to change the way you talk about AI from the theatrical to the operational.
Exactly.
Give us those powerful examples.
So instead of the big announcement, we're rolling out AI, the operational truth should be. We're defining standard AI patterns that reduce cycle time and error rates in core workflows with built-in controls.
That's grounded in business reality. It's about process improvement and risk mitigation.
Right. And instead of saying, teams can experiment freely with any model,
the truthful statement is, we're limiting variation at the model layer and allowing innovation at the prompt and workflow layer.
It clearly communicates where the guardrails are and where creativity should be focused.
And that executive demand, we need to move fast.
That gets replaced with the engineered truth. We're optimizing for flow without increasing defect rates. It grounds the speed goal directly in quality, showing you understand the systemic risk. This is the language of a predictable engineered system. So we've covered the framework, the standards, the governance. Now, listeners asking the critical question, okay, what's the very first concrete step I should take tomorrow? And it's not launch copilots.
Section 6, this is the 30-day path to boring on purpose, a pragmatic 7-step starting plan to get momentum without the chaos.
Step 1 is absolutely crucial for focus. Choose one workflow that already hurts. Don't pick some brand new greenfield project. Pick something with high rework, serious delays, or error rates that people complain about every single week.
Because that's where the motivation is. You're solving a current pain. But there's a pitfall here, isn't there? You can't pick something that's too painful.
Absolutely. If you choose a process that's globally broken and spans 10 departments, you'll die in organizational resistance before you write a line of code. Choose something locally painful, but systemically contained.
Manageable, but meaningful.
Exactly. Step 2, name the outcome and the owner. One accountable business owner, one measurable KPI. The definition of better has to be unambiguous, and the target unit cost metric. No shared accountability.
It has to be owned by the business, not IT.
Step 3, pick a build shape. Don't invent a new species. Go to the pattern cookbook. Select from knowledge, copilot, doc generator. If it doesn't fit, it gets deferred or redesigned. No duplicate plumbing.
Step 4, automated governance. Tier the risk in 5 minutes. Apply green, yellow, red immediately. Let that tier automatically determine the mandatory controls. No debate, no meetings.
Step 5, the mandatory financial control. Define the cost identity before production. Owner, budget, unit cost metric, and the metering tags. If you don't track the unit cost, you have zero evidence of value.
Step 6 is the first execution step. Ship a small slice with real controls. Start small. Build a solution with human-managed steps first. Minimize the blast radius.
And you have to include the mandatory controls from day one. Audit logging, redaction, the evaluation harness, and those stop-the-line triggers. You prove the governance works before the AI works at scale.
And finally, step 7, hold the line on standards. Loosen the edges for learning.
maintain that standard steady platform and policy, but allow flexible prompts and workflow details in that team-owned layer. The business always owns the outcome.
Do this, and you get momentum without chaos. Teams move faster because the foundation is stable.
You don't have to win the war in the first sprint. You just need to prove you can reliably hit this milestone to earn the right to get to the next one.
That is how you make AI predictable instead of theatrical. You make it boring on purpose.
So this deep dive has really focused on shifting the organizational goalposts from perceived speed, which is so often just chaos, to engineered predictability. We established that VQS sequence is the only path.
Value has to anchor quality, which then enables sustainable speed.
And the core strategy is that standardization principle, reduce variation in the platform layers, maximize flexibility at the local outcome layer.
We've broken down the practical tools. The green, yellow, red risk tiering for rapid automated control, the four supported build shapes to stop duplicate plumbing, and the three-layer cost model to make FinOps for AI enforceable.
By shifting the language from rolling out programs to defining standard work, we move from theater to demonstrable operational truth.
And that operational truth has to be tested relentlessly, not just when things are going well. The true measure of AI success isn't just the number of solutions you deploy.
No.
So what does this all mean for you, the professional who now has this blueprint? What's the final provocative thought we want to leave you with?
The true measure of effective AI governance isn't how well you launch and celebrate a successful AI system. It's how quickly and reliably you can automatically sunset a system that is failing to deliver its target unit cost metric. If value is truly the non-negotiable anchor, then failure to achieve that promised value has to trigger an automatic shutdown. That's what proves your financial controls and governance are real, and that your organization is truly committed to efficiency, not just novelty or vanity projects.